Skin Deep by Arlen Feldman. My grandpop took me to see my mother once. We had to sneak out of the house so that grandmother wouldn't know. He didn't tell me why we were going at first, just that we were going to the circus. Getting to ride in the front seat of the Studebaker was almost as exciting as anything I could imagine the circus had to offer. Just as amazing was leaving our house in Tennyson and driving two whole towns over, an unimaginable distance to me then. Grandpop held tightly onto my hand, which was just as well, because I wanted to go in every direction at once, enticed by the smells of food and animals, the gaudy colors, and the people. More people than I could have ever imagined in one place. But he took me past all of that, past the big tent, much to my disappointment, to a smaller tent, tucked out of the way. Even then, I noticed the furtiveness of the audience, mostly men, as they paid their 25 cents. Everyone knows about freak shows today, and this one had all of the standards. A bearded lady, a strong man, a midget couple, a wild man, and a tattooed lady who, along with a mermaid wearing a skimpy top, drew whistles of appreciation from the crowd. To me, though, it was all new and all amazing. It didn't even matter that I could see the bad stitching on the mermaid's fake tail. But the star of the show was the mirrored lady. She came out wearing a cloak with a hood. The band went silent for a moment, stopping the constant oompa music that they played regardless of what was happening on the stage. Then a guitar started to play a few simple chords, and with the slightest of motions, she dropped the cloak and stood motionless on the stage. I remember everything about that moment. The silence of the crowd that was so amazed that they didn't even whistle. The slow turning up of lights that burnished her and reflected rainbows throughout the tent. And the sudden knowledge that there was someone who was a little bit like me, but oh, so much more. Then she started to dance, slowly at first, the guitar keeping time. The lights reflected off of every single bit of her perfectly reflective skin, even her eyes. She was wearing a swimsuit with a skirt that would be considered tame today, but was pretty risque back then. A drum started, and the crowd started clapping along to it as the mirrored lady began to spin, going faster and faster until it seemed impossible, the lights reflecting and blinding the audience, who didn't seem to care. And then she disappeared, probably through a trapdoor, but at the time, it just seemed like magic. There was silence for a moment. Then the crowd erupted into applause. The tent started to empty almost immediately since the show was obviously over. Instead of following the crowd, though, Grandpop gently tugged me toward the front of the tent, where a muscular man was guarding the stage side exit. Grandpop whispered something to the man that I couldn't hear and slipped something into his hand. The man glanced at me for a second, then moved aside to let us pass. The exit led to a grassy area cut off from the regular trade. Several small tents and old trailers surrounded the space, along with stacked cages, piles of wood, and other random gear. Some of the people back there seemed busy moving things around, while others were resting after the show. Standing in front of one of the trailers was the wild man. 15 minutes ago, I'd seen him running around on all fours, growling at the audience, his dreadlocks flying. Now, he was dressed in a suit and tie and was smoking a cigarette. His hair was still wild around his dark face, though. He winked at me, and I giggled. It's not like I had forgotten the mirrored lady, far from it, but I was still a 7-year-old girl. "We're looking for Dot," Grandpop said, "Dorothy Maywell." The wild man pursed his lips, then pointed at one of the trailers with his cigarette. Grandpop nodded at him, and we headed over, my hand gripping Grandpop's as hard as I could. My name was Maywell, too. Ellie Maywell. The door to the caravan opened after 2 knocks, and there she was, the mirrored lady. She was wearing a dressing gown that covered her up to her neck, but her face was uncovered and reflected the sunlight even more amazingly than it had the lights in the tent. She frowned, and even that was beautiful, light bouncing around the little creases. Dot? Dad? She didn't exactly invite us in, but she didn't slam the door in our face either. After a moment, Grandpop put his foot onto the laddered step, and the mirrored lady moved back to let us in. Normally, I would have been wonderstruck at the inside of the trailer. It was a perfect little world, with a bed and tables covered with exotic trinkets. But at that moment, I couldn't do anything but stare at the mirrored lady. I thought she ought to meet you, at least once. She just grunted and sat down at a little dressing table, then started to apply some sort of powder to her neck and face. After a while, she started to look like a normal person, not reflective at all, except for her eyes. I took off the dark glasses that I always had to wear when I was out and stared at the mirrored lady with my own silvered eyes. Mama? Another grunt. But I saw that she was swallowing hard and blinking. The caravan was only lit by candles, but every time she blinked, there was a flicker of light, then dark, like she was sending me a code. I think I may have been crying, but I never stopped staring. After a while, she turned to me and actually smiled. She put out her hand, and I took it. At first, I thought she was going to shake it like she was meeting another adult for the first time, but she just held it. Ellie, nice to meet ya. I'm Dot. I just nodded. I could see myself reflected in her hand, but distorted so that my face looked too short, like in the back of a spoon. I never wanted to let her hand go. And now the image was even more distorted by my tears. The mirrored lady squeezed my hand, swallowed, and then started singing. It was a popular tune back then. Tooraloora, hush now, don't you cry. Just like everything else about her, her voice was beautiful. I have no memory of leaving the caravan or of getting home, although I think Grandpop got yelled at by Grandmother for sneaking us out. The accident happened when I was 9. I'd collected every mirror in the house that wasn't too heavy for me to carry. It was an old, sprawling house that I'd spent years exploring, and I knew where all the mirrors were hidden, under cloths with old furniture, in cupboards and wardrobes, even one small one in Grandmother's room. I used string to tie them to me. 2 big ones made a sort of sandwich board that covered my back and front. I'd spent hours making intricate string nets to hold others to my arms and legs, and I had a couple just sticking out of my drawers. I tried dancing, but it was too awkward and heavy. I did manage to spin a bit. My room was too dark, though, so I went out into the hallway dressed only in my underthings and all the mirrors so that I could get to the big window. Grandmother should have been in the kitchen, That is where she always was in the morning. But for some reason, she'd come upstairs. She stared at me for a second, then started towards me, her hand raised. "You slut! You little slut!" I didn't even know what the word meant, but I knew it was bad. I turned and tried to run, but the weight was too much. I tripped at the top of the stairs. I don't exactly remember what happened next either. They must have driven me to the hospital, I suppose. I know I was there for a long time. They managed to save my life. But the scars never left me. There was an ugly road map of scars over my entire body and my face, although miraculously, my eyes, which were already mirrors, were untouched. I do sort of have one memory from the accident, although it may be a false one. I was lying at the bottom of the stairs, broken glass all around me making rainbow patterns on all of the walls, and I was sure that my mother had come for me. When I was 13, my skin started to change. I'd bled for the first time a month earlier, and that had been a complete miserable shock. Fortunately, I had been at school and not at home when it had happened. The one time I could say that I was better off among the teasing and abuse from my classmates. The school nurse was sympathetic and kind, although it took a while for her to convince me that the bleeding was something that happened to all girls. But my skin? I was pretty sure that was just me. I first noticed it on my arms. But when I started searching, I found patches on my legs and on my back. The skin had gone from white to milky to gray. Only a few spots were truly reflective, true mirrors like my mother, but they were ruined before they formed. My scars twisted across the surfaces, showing horrible distortions of my already distorted face. I hid it from Grandmother, of course. I was in the habit of covering my arms and body as much as possible anyway, so it wasn't so difficult. That worked until my face began to change. I brushed my hair forward as much as possible and just hoped that it would be enough. Grandpop had died 2 years earlier, which still hurts to think about. Things had gotten worse and worse between me and Grandmother. Whatever I did, it was never enough. I'm not sure what she saw when she looked at me, but even then, I sort of knew that she wasn't seeing me, just some twisted reflection of her own misery and anger. Eventually, we just stopped talking to each other. It was just the two of us at dinner one night. I had made soup, and Grandmother and I were sitting opposite each other silently eating. I'd grown used to the silence by now, preferred it. But when I looked up for a moment, she was staring at me and seemed to be quivering with rage. She stood, and I actually backed up as though she was going to hit me. Instead, she turned and walked out of the room. I touched my face and realized that the silvery gray patches had spread farther down than I'd realized. They were clearly visible below my hair, little areas of cool smoothness between the rough, ragged scars. Not knowing what else to do, I finished my soup, then took both bowls to the kitchen and washed and dried them. Then I went out to the hallway. Grandmother was standing there by the front door. A small suitcase sat on the floor next to her. We stared at each other for a long time. "I don't know how to stop it," I said. "Tell me what to do, and I'll do it."
"Go. Just go."
She said it quietly, which I think made it worse. Crying, I moved toward the door, and she backed up as though I was going to attack her. I grabbed the suitcase and ran. Grandmother had packed all of my clothes, and I found an embroidered wallet inside that held $50 in shabby fives and ones, which seemed like a fortune to me. At first, I thought Grandmother was being kind. Then I thought she was giving me money so that I could get as far away from her as possible. It was only years later that I started to understand that a person's motives were often not so simple. I took a bus to Chicago just because it was a city I'd heard of and was less scary sounding than New York City. It never occurred to me that they wouldn't sell a ticket to a kid. I guess it never occurred to them either. The $50 didn't last long. I tried to get a job. I was a pretty fair hand at sewing and could wash dishes as well as anyone, but I was rejected automatically for being too young or too scary looking. I went into one shop that made dresses and had a help wanted sign in the window. The woman at the counter took one look at me and just started to scream and scream. I ran. After that, I ended up begging. It was the one job where my scars were an advantage. Well, if I could have found a circus sideshow, maybe I could have worked there too. But I had no idea how to find one. As I grew older, at least I was spared much attention towards the other profession that young women on the street tended to drift towards. I had a whole series of places to sleep. Some of the smaller parks worked okay in the summer, so long as you avoided the bad cops. A lot of cops would see me, see my face, then leave me be. I loved Grant Park, where I could stare at Lake Michigan, watch the waves, and not see my reflection. But that was rich person territory, so I generally couldn't sleep there. In the winter, Chicago got cold, but strangely, the cold didn't really bother me. I tried to stay out of the wind, but I usually didn't need to spend any of my small store of money on one of the cage hotels with their chicken wire rooms. I also generally avoided the religious shelters with all of their rules and lectures. It was in one of those where my little suitcase had been stolen. One night, I'd found a spot to sleep in a shed behind a tenement on the south side. I woke to screaming. The main building had caught on fire. I quickly grabbed my things and circled the building, planning on getting as far away as possible, but something about the fire was mesmerizing. I couldn't look away. A crowd was starting to gather, and I pulled my hair over my face. It was much longer now and completely covered my scarred gray features, but no one was looking at me right then anyway. Most of the residents had managed to get out of the building, some of them coughing, many of them with ash on their clothes. A couple of people in the crowd were holding back a woman who was trying to run back inside. She just kept screaming, "My baby, my baby!" I don't know why I did it. Perhaps it was the idea of a child who was actually loved. Perhaps it was just because of the beauty of the fire. Or perhaps it was because I had nothing to lose. I darted past the woman and into the building. The noise was what hit me first. The fire was a roaring tempest of wind, punctuated by crashes as pieces of the building gave way. And I felt the heat, knew it must be intense, but it was just a rough tickle on my skin. The first flight of stairs was intact, but the second had half gone. I had to grab hold of a smoldering beam and pull myself up. The little girl was hiding under her mother's bed. By some flip of a coin, the room hadn't yet been touched by the fire. The noise of the fire just sounded like a distant storm. I tried to coax her out, but when she saw me, she ducked back under again. Thanks to my scars, I couldn't even save her life. Then, for some reason, my mother popped into my head. And I remembered her singing to me, My voice wasn't good, but I gave it a try. Tora, Lura, Lura, hush now, don't you cry. The little girl poked her head out from under the bed and looked at me. Then she reached up and touched my face. I managed, barely, not to flinch.
Does it hurt?
No, honey, it doesn't hurt anymore. She nodded and came all the way out. I smiled at her the best as I could and picked her up. When we got to the hallway, I could feel her trembling against me, her arms wrapped tight around my neck. The beam I'd used to get up was gone. I looked around desperately for some way out, but I couldn't see anything. Honey, I need you to be really brave, okay? I felt her nod. I'm going to lower you down to the stairs below. When you are ready, you're going to drop a little bit, just a little bit. Then you have to run as fast as you can down the stairs and then out the front door. Can you do that? Another nod. I lay down on the smoldering wood and took her hand and held it tightly. She whimpered slightly, but didn't cry. I lowered her down as far as I could. She looked up at me, and I tried to smile. Let go, honey! You've got to let go! I had to yell for her to hear me. She fell, and my heart lurched as she crashed into the stairs. But then she was up and running. I stood up and ran as well into the front room. I was having trouble breathing now, but I could still stand the heat. The front window was half on fire, but through it I saw the little girl burst out of the front door and into her mother's arms. The girl pointed up at the window, and soon a half dozen other people were pointing at me as well. I ducked back into the room out of reflex. I realized I was sobbing. A moment later, I realized that I was on fire. My clothes had caught, and all of a sudden, as though it had crossed some threshold, I started to feel the heat. For a moment, I thought it would be fine, that my strange flesh would protect me. But my skin was imperfect, and that let the fire in. I screamed and tried to get the ragged clothing off of me, but it didn't matter because now the fire was in my flesh, crawling along my scars. The floor collapsed, and I fell, still burning, onto the floor below. The pain was now beyond endurance, and I screamed again, rolling on the ground in a desperate attempt to put out the fire, fighting until I no longer had the energy to move. Then, strangely, the pain started to diminish. Some sort of merciful release before the flame took me completely. I closed my eyes, waiting for the end, and kept waiting. I don't know how long I lay there like that, seconds, minutes, but eventually I opened my eyes. There was no pain, and the room was full of rainbows. I looked down at myself in amazement. The scars were gone, just gone. Instead of milky gray, my arms were perfect burnished mirrors. I pulled the charred remnants of my clothes off. Then I started to spin. The fire sparked and glittered off of my flawless, reflective skin. And it was beautiful. I think I laughed, the first time I'd done that since Grandpop had died. A massive beam crashed down beside me, and I suddenly remembered where I was. I ran through a wall of flame to get to the landing. I could barely see through the inferno that the stairs had become, but somehow managed to make it down to the ground floor without falling. My mirrored flesh was glowing red hot as I ran out through the front door into the freezing Chicago night. I made it 4 or 5 steps. Then the cold started to win against my heat, my arms windmilling out to try to stop me from falling. I was sure that I was going to crack into a million pieces. But instead, I just froze in place. My mirrored skin transformed yet again into solid, unmovable glass. My arms held out as if they were wings. I never moved again. Time passed. I was aware and not aware. I felt it when the women of the neighborhood came by and polished my skin, could hear their laughter as my reflections caused rainbows to burst over the otherwise gray buildings. Just like my mother, I was the center of attention. But I hoped that it was more for what I had done than for what I was or for what I had become. As I stood and dreamed, I became less and less engaged with the world around me. But I still was conscious enough to recognize the girl that came to visit me every year. She would lay flowers by my feet, then hold my hand and sing. Tooraloora, to me. It was enough. You have been listening to Skin Deep, written by Arlen Feldman, narrated by Danita Feldman. We hope you have enjoyed this presentation. Thank you for listening.